Hello, you're watching Talking Europe. It was an emotional moment in the French capital. In December 2015, nearly 200 countries adopted the Paris Agreement, committing themselves to limiting global temperature rise to well below 2 degrees Celsius over pre-industrial levels. The global consensus on such a difficult issue was remarkable. But scientists have pointed to an increase in extreme heat events in the decades since the Paris Accord was signed, as well as record high levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere in 2024. Also, keeping the agreement on track depends on countries submitting and then following through on their NDCs, or nationally determined contributions. This year, there were ructions over the European Union's contribution ahead of the COP30 meeting in Brazil. This as a heated debate continues in Europe about the bloc's 2040 climate goal. Well, we're going to unpack all of this with my guest, Isabella Lövin, who's a Swedish MEP from the Greens. She's a former Minister for Climate and the Environment in the Swedish government and a former Deputy Prime Minister of Sweden. Thank you so much for being my guest.
Thank you for having me.
So you were saying before the last COP in Baku, I think you were citing the UN, that the world is on course for 3 degrees of warming. So are we basically failing the Paris Agreement?
At the moment, you have to answer yes to that question. I mean, we had this kind of big consensus on the Paris Agreement 10 years ago, but it's a bottom-up approach. So it's based on voluntary commitments. And last time the UN checked on all the commitments from all the countries in the world, we are heading for 2.9 degrees. And we need to really speed up the implementation to reduce emissions. And sadly enough, we see now the US leaving the Paris Agreement for the second time and the EU not taking the leadership that we should do in order both to help financing the developing countries' efforts, but also showing that we can do the technological leaps and show the way how to do it.
So do you think the main problem then, again, taking the last 10 years since this agreement, is not so much countries not submitting their contributions, because they have done that. Of course, they've been late sometimes, but it's the follow through on these on the NDCs that's the problem.
I think problem is very much lack of leadership from the developed countries, and also that the poor countries in the world, they have been promised also economic help to do the transition. So many of the so-called NDCs, the national contributions, are conditioned by if they get this economic support. And now, for instance, the US is withdrawing all the support through the Green Climate Fund. This is the second time around. And we see many countries around the world also diminishing their development aid. Yeah. And this is creating a lot of distrust from the developing countries, who are, by the way, very much struck by hurricanes, drought, forest fires, all these things that we see in Europe and we see in the United States, but they don't have the means to adapt to it and help their populations.
And just to give a figure on that, in the last COP, so in COP29, the developing countries were pledged $300 billion in climate finance. You think that's now very much in doubt because, as you've mentioned, the US is withdrawing from the second time. So nobody can really fill this gap on climate finance, which is such a crucial aspect.
I mean,
well, could the EU do it?
Yeah, well, I mean, depends on how you see this, because the world actually has a lot of money going around anyway. But they're going to the wrong things right now. We're still subsidizing fossil fuels. The EU is still importing even fossil fuels from Russia and from the Middle East. And all this money should be diverted to defossilization or decarbonization and also to help other countries that have less means and less capacity. You know, renewable energy, green solutions, they shouldn't be the alternative. They should be the main road for us to go.
And is the EU backsliding on that transition then?
Yes,
how?
Yes, indeed, very much so.
Give me a few elements.
Yeah, and
of
I think
then.
It's really, really regrettable, and it's in fact even dangerous, because we're now in a geopolitical situation where we have war in Ukraine, in Europe. Let's say the world order is changing with the United States behaving in very, let's say, irrational ways. And I think the EU, in its own self-interest, needs to have more independence when it comes to its own energy production. And that's the only way we can do that is to invest in renewable energy, 100% homegrown energy, not being dependent on Russia or any other country in the world. So that's one thing. Also on critical raw materials and let's say the economy. Now we see how China, which is a communist power, has invested enormously and subsidized development of EVs, the electric vehicles, and new technologies. And the EU is falling behind. We are really being outcompeted by others if we don't continue to do the green transition. And this is really undermining our own competitiveness, which is really strange because in this house and the whole European Union, everyone is focusing on competitiveness. But I think we interpret it in different ways. And also, there's a lack of leadership in many countries. So there's a fear to actually go out and say, we need to do this transition, to say that we're going to fix this, we're going to do this. Because if we don't do it, we will be very left behind by China, by others, and still be dependent on imports of fossil fuels for billions and billions of euros.
So speaking of leadership or lack of it, tell us a bit about how you see this debate on the 2040 climate target that the European Commission proposed, but there's pushback, obviously, from national capitals on that. How do you see all that?
Yeah, I think it's really regrettable, again, because we have an industry, a clean tech industry that has invested a lot in the EU moving forward very, very fast. I come from Sweden. We have green steel companies that have invested billions in actually producing green steel. And now the many countries are kind of being skeptic about the EU going so fast for 2040. But 2040 is very close if you look at how the industries are investing.
Yeah.
And they need to have a clear signal from the EU that we should go for minus 90% reductions in CO2 emissions by 2040. That unleashes a lot of investments for Europe. We have promised the rich countries, the developed countries, we have developed our wealth through the burning of fossil fuels. We also promised to be more ambitious than the developing part of the world, to go to show leadership, to be at the forefront of this development. So it's not at all a kind of too much to demand from the EU that we show how we can get to minus 90% by 2040. And all the analysis that has been done by the European Commission shows that it's perfectly doable. We have all the tools that we need in terms of legislation, in terms of research and innovation and development. So we're the continent that can do it. We can't look at the US to do it. And yeah, maybe China will get there before us. I don't think so. But I mean, they are for sure investing in the technology that we later on will have to import if we're not there to kind of show leadership. So it's in our own self-interest, but also our moral obligation. I was also the Minister of International Development Cooperation for Sweden. I visited small island states in the Pacific who are actually evacuating their young people right now because of the expected sea level rise. So, I mean, the climate crisis is here. It's real, and we cannot only talk about it like, yeah, how are we going to be competitive for the next year, or how is the EU economy developing for like 3 years or 5 years ahead. We have to have a 100-year perspective on this, and if we do it right now, we have the possibility to create a safer world for our children and grandchildren, and also, yeah, protect everything we love with this planet.
Just a very quick final point, Isabella Lövin. There's obviously heated debates happening here in this chamber, and your political opponents here have said that the Greens are out of touch when it comes to industry, that you don't understand the administrative burden on companies and so forth. They need these simplification measures to be competitive and to continue the green transition. What do you think when you hear those kind of accusations?
Well, I mean, us, the Greens, we're all for simplification when we're talking about over bureaucracy on some things like state aid rules or, some excessive reporting obligations for SMEs. But, I mean, if you look at reporting for sustainability, looking at risks, if we're going to import products that are produced outside of Europe that have caused a lot of emissions or use child labor, all these things, it's not excessive reporting we're asking for. And we know that the big companies like IKEA or Volvo or big European companies, they already prepared to do this reporting. They're not asking for deregulation of these things. So I think we should look, when we talk about getting rid of excessive administrative burden, we should look at the right things. But now, here, this house, many of the right-wing parties and the extreme right parties, they are only talking about environmental legislation, about climate legislation. That's the only thing they want to deregulate, and not things that actually could be simplified. So for the companies, it's much better to have clear targets that are really long-term, so they know what they should invest in. And I speak to many companies all the time, and they say to us, just tell us what we need to do, and we will do it.
Yes, certainty for companies is crucial. We'll have to stop there, but thank you so much for being my guest, Isabella Lövin, Swedish MEP and former Minister for Climate and former Deputy Prime Minister of Sweden. That's all for this edition of Talking Europe.